Black man wants to look good first, win second.
That is the most ridiculous piece of philosophical bullshit I have ever heard. Look right over here. Right over here. There's a goal right there. Get your money, get the ball, let's go. Quoting myself, that's absolute garbage.
I'm tired of your shit.
Yeah, I'm tired of your shit too.
Basketball hustlers join forces to double their chances of winning money on the street courts and in a basketball tournament. I don't know why I read it in that cadence. I don't know what I was going for there.
You've gone very Christopher Walken very early in the show tonight.
I didn't mean to. I was reading that, and that's the first time I've read it. So pull back the curtain a little bit. Hunter writes up these summaries, or he gets some of them from IMDb, stuff like that. I never read them. Yeah. I never read them before the show. I always do it on the spot, and sometimes it goes very weird. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to a new episode of Extras and Epilogues here on the Podzilla 1985 Podcasting Network. My name is Shannon Young. The theater is open once again with me, of course, this night, as he is every Tuesday, Wednesday, whatever day this is. It's Hunter Hendricks.
Both are accurate.
Yeah.
Both of those are accurate. I was trying to find something to throw in here, but it all is just going to sound mean because most of the quotes from this movie are mean.
Yes. Almost as mean.
I jumped in the list, and the first thing I saw was, oh, man, shut your anorexic malnutrition tapeworm having overdose on Dick Gregory bohemian diet drinking ass up.
That's harsh. I just found out today that under Donald Trump's Agenda 47, I'm going to be murdered and someone's going to get a hat for it. That's in his agenda, is to murder me specifically.
On the website.
Nah, I probably shouldn't make those accusations on the air. That might be a mistake.
You don't want to be careful with that one.
This is not a political show, ladies and gentlemen. This is the only
that
one.
That was a satirical thing.
That's not political. Sense. We talk about films on this show, and for most of the time, you guys listen to it, and you enjoy our discussion about films and cinema, unless it was The Proposal, in which case no one listened to it. That's fine.
True.
Ryan, I blame Ryan Reynolds for that, because it's definitely not Sandra Bullock. Tonight, we are kicking off March Madness. That is a month full of basketball movies.
Hell
with
yeah.
The 1992 comedy extravaganza, and a film that actually was very near and dear to me growing up. And let's see if it's still good, like while you were sleeping, or if it took the dog soldiers route, in which it became a giant disappointment. It's White Men Can't Jump, tonight on Extras and Epilogues, released on March 27th, 1992, directed and written by Ron Shelton, which did Bull Durham.
Right, Ron Shelton is a guy who, he was a baseball player. He worked as a minor league infielder for many years, and once he left that, he just kind of started putting pen to paper. So Bull Durham was loosely based on his baseball career, but he was a multi-sport kind of guy. And once he was watching, if I recall correctly, the story behind this movie basically was he was watching a street court basketball tournament, kind of listening to the way people talked. And he said, you know, within a day, most of this movie was written over the course of like 3 days. He just hammered it out. But he said within, you know, a day of participating and just kind of watching these games, he had his characters. He knew who Sidney and Billy were the moment that he left the court that day.
And boy, Sidney and Billy, what a pair those guys are. Played by, in order, Wesley Snipes and Woody Harrelson. One of these men I felt were perfectly cast and believable, and the other one was Woody Harrelson.
That's a shame. I thought he was good, man.
No, he was good. It's just, all right.
But
so,
it's a weird casting. I'll give you that much.
And Rosie,
it's a weird choice.
And Rosie Perez with an appearance by Alex Trebek, of course. So before we get deeper into it, so the reason I say that is Woody Harrelson in 1992. You got to remember, to me, growing up in the late 80s and early 90s, I knew Woody Harrelson from Cheers. You know,
Cheers. Sure.
So by the time this movie,
Woody,
by the time this movie rolled out, I knew him from Cheers. Now, whether or not I had seen this movie after I watched Cheers or what, I knew him as the dim-witted Southern, you know, bartender.
Right.
So for him to be a street ballin', you know, basketball player in this film felt like such a miscast to be at the time. And rewatching it, I guess I just can't let go of Woody Harrelson as the Woody Harrelson we all know. Even today, he does not strike me as a guy that's about to go out there with a parental advisory shirt on and start hooping in Venice Beach. It just doesn't.
Yeah.
It doesn't. And nor would he be with Rosie Perez, for the record.
But I think that's part of what works for the movie, because again, you said it in the description, they're hustlers. They're street hustlers. What better way to hustle people than for them to not even have any indication that you are the kind of person who could go out and do what he does?
That's true. I mean, that's the point of the film. That is the point of the film, right, they underestimate him every time.
Sort of famously, but I guess it's actually kind of not as famous because it's trivia. Come to find out, I didn't include this specific bit in here, but there's a lot of talk about like how he and Wesley Snipes got ready to play basketball in the game, because of course there are a lot of these shots that can't be done without them actually being there. Woody had played some college basketball, and basically he and Wesley Snipes, when they were done with their training from Bob Lanier, who was a retired Detroit Pistons center, they could have basically walked on to an NCAA Division III team, according to that specific player. That said, I didn't write it in here again, sure, but Woody Harrelson was better. All accounts say that overall he was better at playing than Wesley Snipes was, which I think is kind of why they give him that he kind of gets that shine in the movie. I mean, Sidney's a good player, but it's pretty regularly shown that Billy's just that little bit better than him at most things.
Yeah, except keeping a woman.
Yeah. Yeah. That's... Yeah, because even when Sidney screws it up, he still figures it out.
Yeah, so I grew up in this era. I was still a kid in this. I wasn't even a teenager yet when this movie came out. But growing up where I grew up, famously, if Tanner were here, if Kaz were here, they would back me up on this. We had a legitimate, legendary basketball player working at our school as a sort of not necessarily a substitute teacher, but I don't want to say he was a custodian, because I don't think he was a custodian, but he helped out at the school. I don't remember what his official job was, but his name was Chico Vaughn.
Do you remember when you could just do that, by the way, just as a quick aside, when you could just be somewhere and do something and nobody could really pinpoint like who you were or why you were there. It was fine as long as you were helping out.
Yes. I don't remember what Chico Vaughn did at the school. I just remember him being at the school all the time, hung out with us. He would be in study hall sometimes watching the class. I remember he did stuff around the school, but I can't tell you what his job was. But Chico Vaughn was, a fairly famous basketball player. He played for the St. Louis Hawks. He played for the Detroit Pistons. He won the 1968 ABA championship. He was a fantastic player. He died, unfortunately, in 2013. I think he was 73, I want to say it was. But the point of this is not just to brag that, hey, we had Chico Vaughn at our school, and that was very cool. It was just that I grew up in a very basketball-heavy area. Like, basketball was big to us. We had a basketball goal out on the road where I lived. We played basketball all the time at school. I mean, basketball was huge to me. And this was my favorite basketball film growing up. This was everything I wanted in basketball. It was the trash talk. It was the hot girls. It was Rosie Perez. It was all the things I wanted as a youth. And we trash talk. Maybe sometimes I credit my success in professional wrestling on the microphone with how much trash I talked in basketball. Because you learn real fast.
You have to. Yeah,
it's part of the game. Yeah. Street ball was a vicious, vicious, vicious game. But let's get back to the stats real quick before we get into the film, and I'll stop talking about my life, as interesting as it may be. Runtime of 115 minutes, almost 2 hours long, but it's a brisk 2 hours. It's a brisk 2 hours.
It goes quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Budget versus box office, $31 million versus $91 million. We call that a hit where I'm from. Critical reception, 75% critical approval rating on Rotten Tomatoes with an average review of 6.4 out of 10. Metacritic score of 65 out of 100. That's generally favorable. 3.5 out of 4 stars from Roger Ebert, who said, not simply a basketball movie, Ron Shelton knows his characters. I believe this is also one of Stanley Kubrick's favorite films. This movie.
Yeah.
I don't know if you knew that.
Yeah, it was. He cited it. I don't know that it was necessarily like cited as an influence or anything like that. Kubrick didn't exactly work in this particular medium, but it was something that he really enjoyed to just watch. And that, to me, that's a really high watermark of, it's all well and good to say, hey, this this you know, auteur, this filmmaker, whatever influenced me. It's another for them to go, man, I just really like their movies.
Yeah,
it has nothing to do with like it influenced me, it made me want to make movies. Like, that's great too, and that's a whole different level of respect.
Right.
But for somebody who is as renowned as Stanley Kubrick to go, I just think his movies are good.
Yeah,
I just like to watch his movies. That's awesome, man.
Let that sink in. Stanley Kubrick, the director of A Clockwork Orange, the director of Eyes Wide Shut, of The Shining,
2001 A Space Odyssey,
said, I really love White Men Can't Jump, starring Wesley Snipes and Woody Harrelson. Just shows this is one of those films that transcends different cultures, and it's very much a culture shock. If you watch this movie now for the first time, and you didn't, and you didn't at least grow up in this era, because I know you're a little bit younger, but you still grew up in that era, you know, b-ball, street ball, stuff like that.
We're what, 3 years apart?
I think so.
Wise? Oh, thumbs up.
Yeah.
Things I did. I didn't do that anyway. well, what that was? That's scary as hell.
Yeah, a little bit.
I was born in 85. So I mean, by the time this movie came out, I was 7. Don't get me wrong, but the that kind of culture, that late 80s, early 90s culture, really stuck around until, what, 95, honestly? I mean, it was really right to the middle of that era. So even if I wasn't, like, fully cognizant of it at this, like, adult level, I knew what was going on. And now when I look back on it, I can go, oh, I remember all this stuff. I just didn't really get exactly what was happening. So, yeah, I mean, this was the perfect little throwback. Like, I'm watching it going, God, this movie is the 90s incarnate, especially early 90s.
The fashion,
from the cars to the clothes talk, to the music,
the TV show,
every bit of it.
Rosie Perez. 100%. When I think, like, seriously, no, when I think,
like, once in a while, you're just gonna go Rosie Perez.
When I think of the 90s, especially, three names that pop into my head almost instantly are Wesley Snipes, Woody Harrelson, and Rosie Perez. Snipes was at this time in 92 was on fire. He would go on to even bigger and better heights. I mean, Wesley Snipes, one of the all-time great action stars, great charisma, great personality. Woody Harrelson, really underrated as an actor for a lot of his career. You know, he did this, he did Natural Born Killers, he's done so many different things. He's really shown a great range. Rosie Perez, one of my favorites. I mean, she's always been one of my favorites. She's got moxie, she's got spunk in spades.
Rosie Perez is one of those people who, it wasn't really until, honestly, when we watched this movie yesterday, and it was the first time I'd seen it, first time my wife had seen it. She actually only saw about half of it because I started it while she was asleep. But one of those people who, I think, as watching this movie, I went, oh my God, I have seen her in a lot of stuff, and I just don't realize it. The one that I completely forgot was Birds of Prey, of all things. She's in Birds of Prey.
She is,
and she's great in that.
Yeah.
That movie does not get enough credit. Right before COVID hit, and I think that just really sunk it big time.
I remember Rosie Perez especially from, and this is another, this is going to be, this episode is going to be a lot of throwbacks. If you're a 90s kid, you're going to love this episode probably.
Yeah, oh yeah.
What I remember Rosie Perez from first, maybe even before this, maybe after this, it's been a while, so I don't know where my timeline is on my brain, right? She was the choreographer for The Fly Girls on In Living Color. I don't know if you knew that.
Oh, yeah. Okay. No, yeah, I didn't know that.
Yeah, she was on In Living Color, but she wasn't on In Living Color. She choreographed the Fly Girls dances, which famously also is where Jennifer Lopez got her start.
Lopez, yeah.
So, it's pretty interesting. Rosie Perez has been around for a long time and is just a fantastic, fantastic actress. And I don't think she ever will get the her flowers. I don't think she'll ever get the respect she deserves for being such a diverse person in the entertainment industry, acting, singing, choreography. I mean, she's absolutely fantastic, and she's great in this movie. I had, you know, crush that crush button. I had the biggest crush on Rosie Perez in this film. I just thought she was the most adorable person in the world. Maybe a few more F words than I generally go for in women that I'm attracted to.
What? To be fair, that's true of the entire movie. So
it was the style at the time.
Constantly.
A lot of curses. A lot of curse words in this movie.
She doesn't have, I don't know that she has any award wins, but she was nominated for Best Supporting Actress for Fearless in 93. I don't know what that is. I don't think I've seen this.
Fearless. So I'd have to look that up.
Jeff Bridges, Isabella Rossellini, John Turturro. I don't know anything about this movie. Never heard of it. But she also got Primetime Emmy Award nominations for In Living Color for that. And then again, so this is where actually, weirdly enough, where I mostly knew her from. There's a show that came out just a couple of years ago with, oh God, what's her name? She was on the Big Bang Theory. She's the main Kaley Cuoco.
Kaley Cuoco, yeah.
Called the flight attendant on HBO.
I remember that. Yeah. Yeah.
And Rosie Perez was in that. And I remember thinking, like, this woman's great. She looks familiar, but I don't. And I just never bothered to go look and see where I'd known her from. And sure enough, then there was this, you know, breadcrumb of trail
all
the way back.
A lot of films that I absolutely love from her back, especially back in those early days. Do the Right Thing, Spike Lee movie. I was a big fan of Do the Right Thing. She was in It Could Happen to You. You remember that one? With
I am aware of it with the Haim or the Coreys, right?
No. I know which one you're talking about. It's a similar title. No, this is the one. It's Nicolas Cage and he's a cop and he wins the lottery and he promises this waitress that if he wins the lottery, he's going to give her half of it or some of it.
Yeah.
And he's married to Rosie Perez and he ends up winning the lottery and follows through. And apparently it's based on a true story. And that was big back in those days. That was a big one. She was in The Road to El Dorado, which I have seen but don't remember much of, but I know Lindsay loves it. Yeah. She's a huge fan of it. Riding in Cars with Boys with Drew Barrymore. I thought that was a really good movie.
I have seen that. Yeah. Of all the weird things to pull out of there, I have seen that one. that's – you talk about somebody who just has a really, really shored up career. Just has, like you said, maybe not somebody who's going to get flowers and get their flowers in the sense of getting a ton of nominations and awards and all of that, but just has a really solid, you can look back on, you know, just bedrock of a career and go, look at all the stuff that I've done.
Yeah, look at all the stuff I've done. And very, very diverse. Now she was also, unfortunately, she was also in The Dead Don't Die as Posey Juarez, which is funny.
Oh no.
But, oh no. I don't like that film.
Well, that's funny. The movie is not.
The
funny,
movie but... was good until like the last 40 minutes, and then I hated it. Anyway, let's talk more about While You Were Sleeping with Sandra Bullock.
Shannon, no.
Oh, my bad. Different episode. Let's talk more about White Men Can't Jump, which very racist name. It's a very racist film. There's a lot of racism in this movie. I think the one that's that and if you've never seen the film, why are you listening to the show? Watch the movie first. But the basics of it is that Wesley Snipes and Woody Harrelson are both street ballers and they end up hustling people on the streets.
Both hustlers too from the get go. Like that's before they even get into it, that's already the case for them.
And they're street ballers. Friendly rivals.
The whole point is that they're hustling.
And they decide to hustle together.
Only friendly rivals, after they figure out that they could do this work better as a tandem. And then hilarity ensues.
So the basic premise is that Wesley Snipes sets up these matches and tells them, you can pick anybody as my teammate and I'll beat you. And Woody Harrelson's little white country ass is there. And they always pick him because he's a little white country boy. And then they win because they're both great players. And it's a very racist concept that, oh, white boy can't play. And as a white boy growing up playing basketball, I felt that too much. That hurt. Yes. That cut me deep. But it is a comical look at these guys hustling. There's a side plot of Woody Harrelson's character owing money to the Stuckey brothers or Stucci brothers. I forget how you pronounce it.
Yeah, I think it's Stuckey. Yeah, I think he calls him Stucky at least once or twice.
There's a subplot of Rosie Perez trying to get on Jeopardy. There's a lot of subplots in this film.
That was the part I forgot to mention. When Ron Shelton was like, you know, just plowing through this script, he had the characters, he started writing. The only thing he didn't have, if I recall correctly, was what Gloria's like story was going to be. And eventually he settled on the Jeopardy thing. And he said, I really wanted to make sure that was its own deal because I didn't want her whole story to just be Billy's story. Yeah. I didn't want it to just be she exists for him to take care of and that's it. And that's part of the reason he includes that conversation in the, you know, I'm thirsty, my throat is dry, I want a glass of water. Well, don't get me one. I don't want you to get me a glass of water. I want you to tell me that you understand how I feel. But that was the whole thing. He wanted her to have her own story and her own opportunity to stand out. And I mean, for 1992, like that's, I know the 90s were not the least progressive time in history, don't get me wrong, but that's pretty progressive in cinema, especially in a movie that is very much built as it's a dude comedy.
It's a dude's movie, like
it's built up as a guy's movie. It's a sports comedy.
I mean, and this is
mama jokes.
Right. This is street culture, and street culture, famously, especially in the 90s, not particularly kind to women. I believe they were referred to as bitches and hoes. Occasionally.
Often.
Yeah.
Yes. So yeah, I thought that was kind of nice that if there's going to be a massive side plot in that way, that it's for her, and it actually is, even if it is a side plot, it basically is character development and growth and stuff for her.
And she did, including a kind of a surprising ending, considering that the movie is, you know, traditional Hollywood films, you always have the happy ending. This, even though it does have a happy ending, it's a little bit surprising. We'll get to that here later on before we hit the epilogue.
Bittersweet
for old Billy. For old Billy, who through this movie proves that he is a great ball player and a complete moron.
And a total idiot.
He can be both things at once.
I was going to say, I love that those can coexist. I love that we don't have to have... this to me is maybe the best example of a, so when you're talking characters, and I'm going to say from a literary standpoint, but it works for this too. One of the descriptions is dynamic and static. I don't know if you ever use this terminology for characters. But basically what it means is the dynamic character grows and changes and learns stuff over the course of their story. Right. Ebenezer Scrooge is the prototype dynamic character, right?
Yeah.
He learns and he has to change his ways. And basically he's a totally different person by the end of the book,
right?
Because he's learned to be a static character learns shit. They don't learn a fucking thing.
They say the same.
Deadpool, who we were talking about before this show, is basically the key example of a static character. By the end of his movies, he may have done better things, but he didn't really learn anything because he's just going to go back to being an asshole at the beginning of the next story.
Yeah, right? Emperor Palpatine.
Same concept. He's never going to learn. A lot of your villains are, basically. If they're not redeemed, then they're going to end up static because they don't learn or change or become, not even necessarily better people, just different people. Because you
can have
dynamic characters who go from being heroic to villainous, right?
Right.
They learn the wrong lesson and they become dicks. I didn't think about it until you were talking about it just now, but these guys and this movie is a perfect example of protagonists, you know, primary main characters of the story being completely static. Because by the end of it, Billy doesn't learn a damn thing.
Neither of them do.
Cindy doesn't really either. Cindy Dean doesn't either. But Billy is really maybe the best example of the two of them of just, he's never going to stop doing the same dumb shit.
Right.
He's always going to be very good at what he does. He's not incapable. He's not useless. But trying to make him anything but what he is, which is a very, very good basketball player and a very stupid in regards to anything else person, is never going to work. It's never going to happen. And that sets up the whole ending, which I think is just fucking beautiful.
There's at least two parts in the film where Billy loses the money because of his stupidity or his pride. And then in the end, he gambles her money and loses big. Like she says, sometimes you could win and really lose. Sometimes you can lose and really win. He wins in the end while losing. And he never really learns the lesson. They end up playing basketball at the end. Like,
arguing about it again. They're still arguing with each other.
Which also, to be fair, is kind of refreshing to not have characters that, because not everybody learns their lessons. You know, like in real motherfucking life, we have presidents that never learn their lesson, no matter how many cases or accusations or convictions, they never learn. So it's nice to have characters that don't learn, that they are just as stubborn and stupid at the end as they were at the beginning, because not everybody goes through a life-altering, you know, event and has their life altered. We all know those people that can screw up, fail, and then they don't learn and they do it again. And they never learn. So, you know, props to them for the realism in that, to take away from so much of the film that was not realistic.
And I know we've already talked pretty well at length about both Rosie Perez and her character, but it's also really, like you said, refreshing is a good term for it. That who is ostensibly a side character, she's not a protagonist, right? No.
She has a
lot more to do than other characters. Right. Yeah, but she's third billing. Is the static character. She's the one who learns and changes and finally makes a choice to get out of this fucking life when she has the opportunity to do so.
She's the smartest character in the movie.
A lot of that. Yeah, absolutely. We don't see a lot of that because, of course, once that happens, she's no longer a part of the movie and the movie's basically over. But the fact that she chose to walk away at all very much reads like that makes her the dynamic character. You don't get that very often. Usually dynamic characters are your main characters. They're the ones that have to learn a lesson or change and grow. And it's all the secondary ones who have to kind of sit on the sidelines and go, I'm going to use the one character trait I have to get you to where you need to get.
Yes, they serve as a guide, or they're a side piece for the main character, basically. Yeah. So,
and this ends up being the other way around. It turns out we were kind of following the side characters all along. Timon and Pumbaa were the stealth protagonists of the movie, and you don't really know until the end. You go, oh, they're both idiots.
Right. But, okay. But when Timon and Pumbaa have sex, who's on top?
I knew when I evoked those names that was coming up.
And then Alec Baldwin, before he's to be convicted of murder, his character came on and said, I was just thinking about this. we'll talk about that tomorrow, by the way, on an all new After Dark. I got thoughts on, I'm sure you saw today that
we got a lot to cover,
that the armorer on Rust was convicted today of manslaughter. Yeah, we'll talk about that tomorrow.
No, I didn't until you just said that. Yeah. Oh.
Yeah, she's going to serve. Ooh. I think they said she'll probably serve about 3 years. We'll talk about that tomorrow. We'll talk about that tomorrow. We got a lot to talk about tomorrow. That's an all new After Dark on the Podzilla 1985 Network. Stay tuned for that. But this movie, in a lot of ways, kind of reminds me of While You Were Sleeping. And there was another film that we did not too long ago, and I can't remember it. But it's one of those films where the movie is made or broken by the charisma of the characters. While You Were Sleeping, if it didn't have Sandra Bullock being Sandra Bullock in that film, it wouldn't have been nearly as enjoyable. This film is very similar in that. If Wesley Snipes, Wesley Snipes and Woody Harrelson weren't as charming as they are, especially Wesley Snipes, this movie wouldn't have worked as well. That's the reason, I think, more than anything, that the remake failed so horribly. Because you can have a bad movie. You can have a bad movie, but if you have a bad movie with someone that you're invested in and that you care about their character and they charm the pants off of you, that can make up for a lot of things.
Yeah. I think, I don't want to say this is what you're thinking of, but for me, a good comparison to go along with it, because it's also sports related, is Rocky. I think Rocky is that way. It's not the tightest script in the world. It's not the most original, out of nowhere, never heard before story. But when you put a guy like Sylvester Stallone, who at his prime was very, very good on screen,
Carl Weathers.
Yeah, I mean, you have characters. It's funny that you have, you know, a black and white pairing again there, that you have these characters and these actors who just shine through them.
Right.
And yeah, it makes a huge difference. First of all, I can't believe they bothered to remake this, because it is as good as it's ever going to get in 1992. 30 years later, you're going to try to make the same movie? Get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, no.
But secondly, you tried to make it with a couple of musicians.
Yeah.
A couple of guys who are primarily, and that's not to say that you can't be a musician and be an actor. Will Smith is right there, right?
Right.
But not everyone is Will Smith. Will Smith is a diamond in the rough in that sense. The guys that they got to do it, Jack Harlow, I'm sure, is a very nice guy. He has some very catchy songs. I know part of me even knew that he was trying to act.
I saw him on SNL. That's the most I've ever seen him act. He was a musical guest.
You put that up against, what, like you said earlier, Wesley Snipes in his prime, Woody Harrelson in his prime, cast almost perfectly in these specific roles. And I really think they tailored a lot around Woody once he was for sure cast as Billy. I think they changed probably some things to make it more like for him in a lot of ways. Because I know there were a couple of people elsewise up for that role. I don't remember who the actors were. There were one or two people who turned it down. David Duchovny, weirdly enough, was one of them.
No.
Yeah, it would never have worked. And I don't think his star was high enough for that at that time either. Because again, this movie really, look at the poster. The poster has nothing to do with basketball. It is the giant faces of Wesley Snipes and Woody Harrelson. But I literally, this is what I was going to say at the beginning of this. I can't picture anyone else doing this movie. I can't. I'm sure that there are other people who could have done a fine job. But take either one of these two people out of the equation and it's just not the same movie. And three, to be fair. Because again, Rosie Perez, it may be third billing, but she's still in the billing.
And that's why I say this movie is made or break, broken on the performance of the main characters, because there are certain characters, certain films that you can't picture that movie without these people, you know?
Right.
And this is one of those films. I cannot imagine making White Men Can't Jump without Woody Harrelson and Wesley Snipes. Maybe it's because I was a huge Wesley Snipes fan in the 90s. Huge Wesley Snipes. Blade, Passenger 57. I love Wesley Snipes. I still love Wesley Snipes. Even if he did Gallop Walkers, which is one of the worst horror films I've ever watched, he was still Blade, and I like that quite a bit. this is the most unique basketball film I think of its kind, because the level, the level of 90s, the level of trash talk, the level of streetwise, this, I mean, this, it's great. I think you had to grow up in that era to really appreciate it, or you at least have to have a respect for that, that culture to really like it. So, you know, the average Tanner might not be a big fan of this. Actually, Tanner might be. Tanner works in basketball, and he works in basketball in Cairo. So, yeah, I mean, that might be right up his alley.
He at least has the culture's not the word that I want. He at least has the, he's steeped in it.
He's steeped in it.
In that kind of environment. Yeah.
I think this movie itself is okay, but it's the strength of the performances and the charisma shown by the main stars that makes it a classic. Yeah. Anyone else in it would have failed.
I agree.
There's a lot of films that do take this approach of white guy, black guy, and let's see how different, you know, their cultures are. It's a cultural mishmash, and a lot of the comedy comes from that. Rocky, even though it's not a comedy, and it wasn't necessarily predicated on black versus white, that was still part of it. You had the very charismatic black champion. You had the white underdog. And in this country, a lot of white people probably saw that and were rooting for Rocky because they wanted the white underdog to win, to beat the mouthy black champion. And in this, you have a similar concept where you have, you know, the very mouthy and charismatic young black athlete and the white guy who's dim as dishwater, and you kind of root for him. But it works because both those films have great leads. Now take that, compare it to a movie that I really like. I really love this film, but not for the strength of its main characters. And that is, there's a film, I don't know if you've ever seen it, it's a boxing movie called The Great White Hype.
No, I'm aware of it, but I've never seen it. I know the name, it's for sure.
It's a great movie starring Damon Wayans as James the Grim Reaper Roper, boxing champion, never been defeated, very Mike Tyson-esque, and they end up finding someone to fight him in the form of all people, Peter Berg. I don't know if you're familiar with Peter Berg. He's a fantastic director.
Yeah,
he's
done some acting.
And it's a similar story. So Peter Berg's character beat him when they were in, I believe, college, and they were boxing. Yeah. So now Samuel L. Jackson, as the Don King character, basically, you know, he hasn't fought in years, but they bring Peter Berg back and he's the Great White Hype. He's the Great White Hope, but he's all hype.
Yeah.
That movie is fantastic, but it's fantastic because of the performances of Samuel L. Jackson, Jeff Goldblum, John Lovitz. There's a lot of fantastic secondary actors in that film, but the main characters played by Damon Wayans and Peter Berg, even though Damon Wayans is a very charismatic actor and Peter Berg does a good job in the film, they don't have that spark that Woody Harrelson and Wesley Snipes has, or Sylvester Stallone and Carl Weathers has. So you never have that dynamic that you have in these films. And I think that's why that film is a funny movie. It's good to watch, but these two films are classics. And I think that's why this movie works so well.
Wow, man, what a cast in this movie for something.
It's fantastic. Jamie Foxx.
But it did not. Jamie Foxx is in it. Cheech Marin is in it. Corbin Burnson is in it. I'm just now looking down this. I've heard the name, but I never once thought about it. It made $8 million at the box office.
And that's great. This is one of my favorite movies.
John Rhys-Davies is in this? Oh, yes, my God.
He's the corner man for Peter Berg's character. And, and the funny, they call him Irish Terry Conklin. And he's always telling them, I'm not Irish. And they're like, yeah, but it sells better. They give him white gloves.
Works, so we got to run with it.
Yeah, they give him white gloves because, you know, a white guy.
Oh, my God.
And when and John Rhys-Davies, when he's trying to psych him up, he says something like his opponent Roper is a jungle beast that wants to do unspeakable things to your sister and mother. God. It's horrible. It's horrible the way it's presented.
Gotta love John Rhys-Davies.
It leans way too hard into racism to the point that it's kind of uncomfortable, but it's still funny. I like that movie growing up. But again, it's not this movie. This movie is way more charismatic. It's probably better written. Ben,
to talk about what you were just describing, but then put it into this movie and make it better. And the reason, again, why this is a classic and that's not. One of my absolute favorite scenes in this movie is when Billy and Gloria, when Gloria goes to Cindy's house to get the money back,
right?
And Billy is following her the whole way on the bus down the street. We're not doing this. We're not doing this. We can't do this. You can't ask for the money back. They go in. The women decide they're going to talk. Billy is just directly confronting Cindy with his boys. You son of a bitch. You rat. You know, you stole my money. You hustled me. This is bullshit. There's a code, blah, blah, blah. get out of the way of the TV, man. And then they start watching, and like literally one scene later, they're all sitting on the same side watching the same basketball game and ranting about the same bullshit.
Yeah. It's the man code.
That's such a great, it's such a great scene. It's so well constructed because you still get the like, I'm pissed off at you and here's why. And it makes total sense. And Sydney just admitting, oh, I know you are, but I'm not going to give you your money back because you got played, man. And then a scene later, they're literally right back on the same side. If there's a better encapsulation of, and it doesn't matter if, again, if you're black or white or where you're from in that sense, if there's a better encapsulation of how dudes get along, I don't know what it is.
Right.
I don't know what it is. They're pissed off at each other for 5 seconds there, and then they don't even talk about like any kind of resolution. There's something that brings them back together, and they go, well, whatever we were talking about is not fucking worried. Let's just barrel down on this.
Which, again, I think is just more proof that Billy is dumb as fuck.
Yes. Here's the guy. Well, that's true, too.
Here's the guy that just hustled him out of this money. Him and his beautiful, amazing, sexy girlfriend he did not deserve in the first place are fighting about it. And he goes to confront him, and then they end up watching the basketball game together. Fuck that.
Yeah.
I'm not breaking bread with my enemies in their house. No, it is.
It's a great fucking scene.
It is.
I love it.
It kind of reminds me of our group chat sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah.
We all get mad at somebody gets mad at somebody else. Somebody gets shot at the end of Helldivers 2, and then we get mad at each other.
But and by somebody, you mean those guys.
And by those guys, I mean them fellas. By them fellas, and by them fellas,
you mean... I can't say.
Kaz.
It was Kaz.
Yeah. I have never watched the I've never watched the remake of this film. I never will. I don't care to.
I won't either.
Yeah. No offense to them.
I have no interest in that.
Even if Lance Reddick's
in it. I can't imagine that it's worth my time. Yeah, that's the real shame. Is I, you know, Lance Reddick kind of makes me go, well, I'd like to see what it's about, but right. I can't imagine that I would ever be like, I have nothing else to do. What should I do? I should watch the 2023 remake of White Man Can't Jump.
Starring Jack Harlow.
And another guy who I thought I knew, but I did not, and I'm not going to try to pronounce his name.
And honestly, I'm too embarrassed to ask at this point.
Yep.
she was also Rosie Perez, so she was Renee Montoya in Birds of Prey. Renee Montoya is a character that I remember from Batman. You know what I mean? That's she was in the animated series a lot. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's very, very cool. She was also on Frasier. She was on the Showtime at the Apollo. She was on 21 Jump Street, which I, of course, grew up with as well.
Yeah.
So Rosie Perez is just, I mean, she's just the best.
She's just out there. Out there doing it.
That's just it. And she deserves better than she, the respect that she gets now. Anyway, I know we're talking a lot about Rosie Perez here.
And again, she's got to get her praise somewhere.
And not enough about Wesley Snipes.
I think we did. He's great in this too, and we said that.
I want to see what movies he's been in recently. Ever since he got out of recently?
Oh man.
Well, maybe since he got out of jail for tax evasion or whatever it was. I forget exactly what it was. That's what they're trying to get me on now. And I'll get sent up for a couple years on this.
He also got weird. That's a real shame of Wesley Snipes. Like late in the game here, he got kind of strange and wouldn't film things unless he could do it in a certain way. Like he kind of got a little bit of an ego, and it's just a
well. He's Wesley Snipes, of course he did. Yeah, he was Blade,
right?
he was the last thing I think I saw him in was The Expendables 3. I do remember that. He was added to the cast there, but he was only in one of those. And then he did Gala Walkers before that, which I was very excited about. So the plot, and this is a movie we'll never, ever, ever review for this show. But the point of the movie was he was a gunslinger. This is an Old West movie. And the people that he killed with his gun came back from the dead to seek revenge on him. And I thought, man, that sounds pretty cool. It was not.
I'm looking at it right now. The most recent thing he did of any like real big release, I would say, because he did a movie called Back on the Strip last year, but I don't know a thing about that. That's the first time I've heard of it. He did the sequel to Coming to America, which was confusingly called Coming to the Number 2 America.
Too fast, too coming. No, wait.
Oh, wait, no.
No.
Take two.
I would like to apologize for that one. All right, let's get to the let's skip to the end here. Let's talk about this for a second. So, the end of the film, Sydney,
are we gonna review it first, or are we gonna talk about our epilogue?
Oh yeah, we do review the film, don't we?
We didn't ever actually do that.
This is it's been a while. We didn't do many shows last week. So
yeah, we did one last week, but it's been a bit.
Was it last week?
Proposal
last week?
That was the end of February. God. Yeah.
I was thinking about this.
You're still coming out of that sickness fog, man.
I was thinking about the top five crushes, biggest crushes I've ever had in life. And I can say with certainty three of them. And those three would be Sandra Bullock. She's number one forever. Mm-hmm. Just forever. She's still on my phone. She's my background. Sure. Kate Upton. I fell very much in love with Kate Upton for obvious reasons. She was Sydney Sweeney before it was cool. Taylor Swift. I love Taylor Swift. She's a huge crush. And then the last two, I kind of go back and forth on. I think Natalie Portman would probably make that list.
Right.
And maybe.
That sounds right for you.
Maybe Rosie Perez. I'll have to think about this a little bit.
Maybe.
I have to think about it. Okay.
People need, inquiring minds want
to
know.
With that said, let's go to the review. So, of course, here on Extras and Epilogues, we follow the great thumbs up, thumbs down ruling of men in our past, and our past specifically. And that goes,
I have to change the name in the group chat to men in our past.
God damn it. So two thumbs up means you love it. One thumbs up means you like it. One up, one down means you're neutral on the film cinema. One down means you didn't like it. And two down mean you hate it. Not many films on this show have gotten two thumbs down. There have been a few.
True.
This one, I don't
only
think...
one unanimous one.
I only think. One unanimous.
Well, no. That's not true because we all gave Fateful Findings a thumbs down all around.
I forgot too. About that. Horrible film.
Yeah.
Oh, Neil Breen, but I love you.
That's it.
And you know what? It does feel kind of dirty to put Dog Soldiers in the same realm as Fateful Findings, because compared between the two, Dog Soldiers is fucking Citizen Kane.
Sure, absolutely. Well, that's what I was going to say. We've said before, we chose a 5-point rating system, which means there's always going to be levels.
Yeah.
We can't do every, you know, you can expand it out as far as you want, 10, right. 100, whatever. And at a certain point, it just becomes a chore.
Right.
So that's why I always say, like, yes, I rated both Ghostbusters 2, or we haven't done 2 yet. I rated both Ghostbusters and A Goofy Movie as two thumbs up. I don't think they're equally good movies.
Right.
I just think they were both really great movies.
Right.
If I had to break it down, one's obviously better than another. But for me, the criteria is always like, especially for two thumbs up, one of the big things is, would I watch it again, and do I want to watch it again soon? That usually is where I get to.
And both of those films definitely hit that criteria of no. If I had to go back and do it again, I probably would have given Dog Soldiers one thumbs down, because I think there were more merits than I think I gave it credit for, because I was just so disappointed.
Yeah. I don't know. That's a tough question right now that I can't parse when I'm trying to. Yeah. I got another movie in my head. And
yeah,
I can't
we can't talk
it,
about that. Let's talk question. About this film. I grew up with this film. This film was in it was in my stack of movies I watched constantly, along with Ghostbusters and Friday. Because I had some varied taste there. I loved this film growing up. I don't love it anymore, but I still like it. It's not as good as I remembered it, only because some films will always stick with you, and they'll always be as good as you remember it, and that movie's called Ghostbusters. And While You Were Sleeping. Some movies you loved as a kid, you love when you were younger, and you rewatch it, and you go, okay, I still like it, but I don't know why I was so obsessed with it, because I'm a different person now. I think it's harder to grow out of something like Ghostbusters and something like While You Were Sleeping, because those films are pretty universal, especially While You Were Sleeping. It's a love story. Unless your heart is cold and you don't love anymore, there's no reason to not continue to like that movie. But this film is very much a product of its time. The acting is great. The writing is good. The characters are memorable. The plot, I mean, it has one and it's serviceable. I don't think it quite hits the threshold of this is a great film, but it's a good film. Mm-hmm. I do recommend it. I think that it's a fun watch, even if you didn't grow up in that time period, you're not part of that culture. I think you can still get a lot of enjoyment out of this film, if nothing else, to see a masterclass in acting charisma by Wesley Snipes. I liked it. I'm giving this one thumbs up, and I'm glad it didn't disappoint me. I was worried that it would. because there's a lot of things that I go back and watch now that at the time I thought, oh, this is hilarious. I mean, even if it's like a YouTube video or something like that, I'm like, oh man, I thought this was great. And you go back and watch it and go, why did I think this was great? What was wrong with me? That wasn't this. This is still good. It's one thumb up for me. I do recommend it.
Yeah. I did not grow up with this movie, despite the fact, again, we're not that far off in actual age difference. And again, it came out when I was 7, so obviously I wasn't going to see it then. It would have been a few years before I would have gotten around to it. I just never did. I never got around to it. When I was a kid, and I've never really talked about this on any of the shows, I don't think, there were two sports that interested me at any given point in time. It was baseball at first, until right. I started trying to play baseball, and I hated it. T-ball was fine. By the time I got to Little League, I couldn't stand it. And so I ditched the baseball sheets. I didn't want to go to Cardinals games anymore, that kind of thing. And then it was basketball. I had a pretty intense obsession with basketball for a while. I got the hoop. I got the ball for Christmas. When I was briefly living outside of my parents' house, like my mom and I were living with my grandpa, I had a neighbor across the street who had a hoop. That's all we did. Like mm-hmm. all of the time. And it would be that thing where it was like, okay, we can't go in and call it a night until we hit these 10 free throws, you know? And you'd be out there after dark, out there with fucking flashlights, just trying to, I'm not giving up until I get it done. There was a time where this was all I cared about. And it's funny looking back on it now, because I don't have that level of interest anymore. I mean, I have some tangential connections to sports, but for the most part, I don't watch sports. I don't care about sports. This, by the way, is why I don't give a shit about football, because I was never into it as a kid either. So going into this movie, I didn't really know entirely what to expect. I knew kind of what it was about, but I had no idea what my reaction was going to be to it, because I like both of these actors. I like all three of these actors, I should say. But I don't have any real strong connection to the sport. What I didn't account for in advance is that I do have a really strong connection to the era. I don't know what it is about the 90s, but that has really like drawn me in the past couple of years. But I talked about Chuck Klosterman's book, The 90s, that I really enjoyed. A lot of the books in general that I read, when it's informational text, is almost always from stuff around that era, whether it's pop culture, movies, you know, whatever. there's something about that just always draws me back. And I guess it's that coming of age around that time. So I threw this movie on yesterday. I knew that my wife probably didn't care that much about watching it, which is why I started it while she was sleeping. She woke up toward the end of it and watched the back end of it with a, hang on. Sorry. Just give me a second here.
He's falling into the traps that I'm falling into. He's got that cough, that tickle in his throat.
I'm joking. Yeah. It's gross. It's not, but it's just, anyway. I'm dragging this out too long.
I do it all the time.
I love this movie. Love this movie.
Okay.
I had an absolute fucking blast watching this movie from beginning to end. So much so that, like I said, Sarah woke up for the last, like, maybe 45 minutes of it. And I can tell she was kind of half paying attention, but she was interested. She thought it was interesting. When it ended, I immediately rewound it to the very first scene with Sydney. First him, like, playing on his own, and then when Billy gets involved. And we watched that, like, what, 15 maybe minute segment. Because I said, if you liked any of what you just saw, you need to see this. And that's what got me hooked on it. And by the end, she goes, yeah, I'd sit and watch this with you. I would watch this again. I would have sat and watched it again right then and there. I thought it was fantastic. I was totally enamored with the characters. I don't entirely disagree with you that the overarching plot, if you really like put it under a microscope, is kind of like,
sure,
there's like a mob thing, and right, they're hustling, but they're not always hustling. The movie feels like it ends about three times before it actually ends.
Right.
But in the end, taken as a whole, as an entire complete story, that's actually what I loved about it. It didn't feel like a big Hollywood production, a big movie that was, again, you know, the life lessons and I'm going to learn something from here to there. No, it is a snapshot of these people's lives from the day that Billy arrives on Venice Beach to the day that Gloria leaves him. And it's just him left with Sydney to figure out what's going on. He doesn't really learn anything. He doesn't change. And that's what I kind of liked that about this movie. It's fun watching the basketball action. They're all great players, and that's just an absolute blast to watch. The music is incredible. God, the soundtrack. We didn't even talk about it at all. But the soundtrack to this movie is so good. The scripting is great. The casting is great. It just, every bit of it hit for me. At no point in time did I feel like I wanted to reach for my phone and do something else. I always wanted to know, even when there weren't any like major stakes on the line, what was going on with these characters. I wanted to just like kind of live in that little universe for a while. Every time they went to a new location, I was invested. What's going on? What's happening here? Who are these people? What are they doing? It struck me the right way on every level. Now, again, is it the same as a Ghostbusters that I think is an almost virtually flawless movie? And I've grown up with, of course not, but this to me is the epitome of what I like to give two thumbs up, because this is a movie that I will definitely watch again, would watch again right now. If it was, hey, you know, I got to do something for the next 2 hours, let's throw on White Man Can't Jump and just sit back and enjoy it.
It's weird the difference between I watched this when I was a kid and loved it versus now as an adult, I think I outgrew it a little bit versus I saw it for the first time as an adult and I loved it. You know, because I think we both really liked the film, but there is a difference of perspective when you saw it and loved it and cherished it as a youth versus seeing it for the first time now. You know what I mean?
Right.
I think there is a difference there, but I think we both agree that it's a great movie. It's one that should be watched. And even though it didn't, there was obviously basketball before this movie. There was streetball before this film. Streetball was pretty legendary in that time period, especially in that area and before. But I remember after this movie came out, that's when I started to notice, and it was a couple years later, but games like Street Hoops, NBA Street, stuff like that. To me, those movies were always trying to be White Men Can't Jump. And there was a White Men Can't Jump game out on Jaguar.
And it was bad.
I never played it.
Was very bad.
Never played it.
I didn't play it, but I did go back
never
and
even
watch
seen it.
I looked it up when I saw that. Yeah, look up some clips sometime. It is not even remotely connected to the movie. The only thing that's close to it is that it's a 2-on-2 basketball game with like no story, and but you play through like progressively tougher teams. The final like boss team very clearly is meant to be Sydney and Billy. That's
but not by name, probably.
Anything. Nope.
Yeah.
Nope. That's all it has to do in any way remotely with the movie, and it's a real disappointment.
That's a shame because there are some really great games inspired by it. Like I said, Street Hoops is one of the all-time greats of NBA Street Volume 2, especially in my opinion. It's kind of like when Fast and the Furious came out. All of a sudden, Need for Speed Underground and stuff like that. Sure. You know, you have that inspiration, Midnight Club, stuff like that.
Yeah.
That inspiration that it doesn't have the name on it, but it's better than what we got with Fast and the Furious, the game. So, go enjoy that. All right. So, ending of the film as we get into the epilogue. So, in the end, as written up by Hunter, and I appreciate it. In a very tight game, Sydney and Billy prevail. Now, this is of course when he decides to gamble glorious money. King and Duck.
Right.
And Billy decides to gamble glorious money that she won on Jeopardy. And she flat out says, if you do this, whether you win or not, I'm leaving.
Right.
And
it is importantly, and I like the way they did this, it is a chunk of money that she gave him. So it's not all of her winnings. She won like $15,000 or something. It's $2,500 she gave him, but she also gave it to him to go get new clothes and to clean himself up, because he has said at this point, I'm going to stop playing basketball for money.
Yeah.
I'm going to go straight. I'm going to go get a job, and basketball is going to become a hobby. And then this opportunity comes up and he says, I'm taking that money. I'm going to go put it on the line against these legendary players.
Right. Which to him probably meant a lot, but we also call that. So I'm single. I'm a single man. I don't have a girlfriend. You're married, obviously, but as a married man, and me, even when I was seeing somebody, we would call this a dick move to take
your technical term is a dick move.
Dick move. You take your significant other's money and you gamble it. That's a dick move.
Yeah.
And
And this is the third time in the movie
he's
done it. Doesn't even account for any other time that's happened before that. This is the third time in a 2-hour runtime film that it has happened.
And God knows how much he's done before this. Like all the money he's blown from the past.
Well, that's a big part of the reason why they're on the run from these kind of shady characters. They're not really mob, but is that
like
he agreed to work a game for them. Yeah, he agreed to work a game for them where he was going to hustle some people. He got pissed off in the middle of the game, and he accidentally won when he was supposed to lose. And so...
And they got me with the fake out in the end, too. When I first saw it, as a kid, it got me.
Even I was like, oh, I'm sorry, what the fuck? And then I heard the camera go off.
Yeah.
I love that also, and we didn't even talk about it then, but my God, as somebody who deals with like themes and that kind of stuff on a regular basis, the theme ties right back then to what Gloria says. Sometimes when you win, you lose.
Yeah, and sometimes when you lose,
you win.
Right.
And this was the same bit. I mean, even going back to their past, he won the game, but that didn't do him any good. $8,000 in the hole. Yeah.
So that is at the end. They play the game. They win. Billy even dunks it because they had to tie the white. They can't jump into there somewhere.
Right. On a 9.5-foot rim.
Yeah, I saw that. That's a little sad. At one point in my life, believe it or not, and you probably won't believe it, I could dunk. I could dunk on a regulation goal. When I balled my heart out, I could dunk. I definitely probably can't do it now, but I'm still a fantastic shot. Get me behind the three-point line. Anyway, they win the game. Billy returns home happy. He doubled his money, doubled Gloria's winnings. But when he gets there, he's crushed to find that Gloria kept her word and she left him. And she left him for good. Yeah. She's gone. That's it. She's out. The mobsters who are after Billy find him. He pays off the debts. And again, in one of my favorite scenes, they show Billy on the ground, blood on his face, like they killed him. Because earlier in the film, they showed him all these pictures of the people they've murdered, which they never murdered anybody. It's all fake. It's just fake. It's a hustle.
They're hustling too. Because that could get them in some real trouble. Yeah, it's continued hustling. Exactly. Because
if they did, that would be some really bad criminating evidence to keep on you at all times, is a picture book of the men you've murdered.
I suspect that none of those guns worked. No. They point like a silenced pistol. He's got like a shotgun with the shells racked along the side of it. None of that shit worked.
All fake.
No, that was real.
Nothing's real in Venice Beach. Billy asks Sydney to set him up with a real job, and Sydney remarks that Billy and Gloria may be better off without each other. Well, I know one of them that definitely is. The film ends as Billy and Sydney launch to yet another basketball argument and return to the court where they first met to play a one-on-one game, this time as friends. And it is a nice piece of camaraderie. As a kid, I didn't understand why Billy would want to be friends with this dude after he fucked him over. Like, I was very much like, I don't understand this. But yeah, as you get a little bit older, you realize, you know, especially with guys, it's easy for guys to screw each other over and then be really friends. Is. Yeah. So what happens to the characters after the film? Usually with this, I take it from a character perspective. Hunter takes it as almost like a sequel type thing. And sometimes we bounce back and forth. There's no set rule on it.
Right.
I kind of have a mid-ground for both, because I think you could very easily make a sequel to this film. And I think if you made a sequel to this film, it would be a lot of the same. It would be basketball. It would be street hustling. I think there are higher stakes in that maybe Sydney does run afoul of someone that's legitimately dangerous. And now these guys are really kind of playing for their life and running from their lives. I think Billy would try to get Gloria back. And I think in Hollywood, he would do it. He would succeed. At the end of the film, he would get a real job and show her that he's really trying. And then she would forgive him and all's great. In real life, that shit would have never happened. He would never see Gloria again. This is in 1992, by the way. This is before Facebook. This is before everyone on Twitter knew where the fuck you were at any point in your life. So it would have been very hard for him to probably even track her down, to be fair.
Yeah.
But that's what I foresee. If you did a sequel, higher stakes, more basketball, more trash talk, and the subplot being Billy trying to get Gloria back. And even though he's trying to help Sydney get out of this jam that he's in, he eventually does learn his lesson. He finds his way. He gets a real job. He wins Gloria back. And then maybe Sydney wins a shit ton of money in some kind of hustle or gamble, and he gets his family to where they need to go. Everyone's happy. Happy ending all around, et cetera, et cetera.
I'm not even going to change much of what you suggested there. In fact, I don't think I'm going to change anything at all. I'm just going to add on to it because I'm more or less in the same boat. Often I say, you know, not everything has to have a happy ending. And I really actually do love the way this movie ends. I think it ends on a perfect note. But if you're going to take it out to a sort of happier note, there's a movie to be made there about, again, Gloria's in Hollywood. That's how he finds her, because she said specifically, like, after Jeopardy, you know, I'll take some acting classes, do a little TV. Next thing you know, I'm getting an Academy Award, that kind of thing. So that's how he finds her. But I think when it's all said and done, I want to see, I think that regular job, because I like everything you laid out. I think that regular job is he coaches basketball. So he either goes to teach at a high school, or he, you know, works with like a youth program or something in and around that area. Especially if, I didn't really think about this, but if you set this movie, it'd be tough to do now because it is so much farther in the future from it. But this movie comes out 10 years ago like from now, you know, back in the 2010s, as a sequel, like you do an actual sequel to the original one. I think you could do some version of that where like years later, this is what the situation is. And you could almost do like a pull them out of retirement type thing. Both of these guys have gone straight. They don't play for money anymore. They still play occasionally. It's like you said, it's a Rocky story. It really is a good analogy for Rocky. They've tried to kind of leave all that behind and someone goads them back out of it. And it's, oh shit, here we go again. You know, we got to do this one more time for whatever reason.
Or you do make the sequel now, or maybe I think it would have worked better 10 years ago. I agree with you on that, but make it where these guys are in their 40s, maybe early 50s. They have children. Yep. His son is a basketball player, hustles the same way. And he meets through luck and circumstances, Billy's daughter. And they fall in love. They have a friendly rivalry and they end up falling in love. Is it completely wild and unrealistic? Sure. Who cares? It's Hollywood.
Sure. It doesn't matter. And I have an idea. They could call it Love and Basketball.
That's
going to do it for us.
And she would be played by Julia Stiles.
No.
Julia Stiles. And he
today would, or 10 years ago.
10 years ago. And he would be played by I don't know. I'd have to think about that one. Because it's gotta be somebody with the Julia Stiles is a great actress.
Michael B. Jordan.
Ooh. Mm-hmm. Would he be age appropriate at that time? You think?
I don't know.
I think that's the only killer. That's a good pick.
Super charismatic guy who's definitely athletic.
Yes.
Who could kind of fit bill, has that like kind of Wesley Snipes kind of swagger.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Michael B. Jordan.
All right, forget Julia Stiles. We'll just get someone to match Michael B. Jordan. I don't even like Julia Stiles. She's fine. Anyway.
I really can't think off the top of my head who it would be who would fit that role. Like as Woody Harrelson, who you cast as Woody Harrelson's daughter. I mean, if it's today, I like a Catherine Newton. But I mean, she's really young for that kind of comparison. Maybe.
I think maybe at that point, let me check ages real quick. Cause I got someone in mind and you might not like my pick, but let me see how old she is versus how old Michael B. Jordan is. Okay. So she's a little bit older than I thought she was. Did not know that.
He's 37.
Okay. Well, she's only 45. So yeah, you could do that. Jamie Presley. She's got kind of a Southern Belle kind of attitude to kind of match, you know, him.
You make the movie 20 years ago.
It's 20 years ago.
2000.
Yeah, because they got to be in their 20s. You make it 20s early.
Approximately 10 years after the original, which is what was happening at that time anyway. Right. Men in Black was getting a sequel like way after the fact, but it was only like a 10-year span or whatever. Right. Yeah, totally.
So there you go. They fall in love, which creates drama between Billy and Sydney. They end up playing basketball for it in the end or something. I don't know. In fact, Billy and Sydney have to play against Michael B. Jordan and Jamie Presley.
How am I just now hearing Billy and Sydney and not making the Scream connection until just now? Because you said Billy and Sydney, and my mind immediately jumped to Ghostface.
It's Ghostface, And that's how you tie it into Scream, because it turns out.
Oh, shit.
Woody Harrelson is the new Ghostface. Him. Yeah. Yeah. All right, well, that's going to do it for us tonight on Extras and Epilogues. The balcony is closed. We will be back next week. What's our next film in March Madness?
I would love to do, because you talked about this one and really loved it, I would love for it to be Celtic Pride. Sorry. I read the C and I want to think.
It should be Celtic Pride, but it's Celtic Pride.
Right, but it's Celtic Pride. And I think it's on Disney Plus, which means it should be relatively easy to get our hands on.
Boy.
So, I'd love for it to be that.
If you want a film that's the direct opposite of the cool factor that this film has, but also, you know, to tie that back into something we talked about earlier, that film also stars Damon Wayans as the basketball player. We talked about
What happened. About that.
One of my favorite bits of Damon Wayans doing stand up is when he talks about during that time period in Hollywood, he just took any role they offered him. So they asked him, can you be a basketball player? He's like, yeah, I play basketball. Can you be a boxer? Yep. He's like, I box. So yeah, he took any role. And that film, Celtic Pride, it's a great cast. It's Dan Aykroyd, Daniel Stern, Damon Wayans. It's a good cast. I have not seen that film also in about 20 plus years.
I've never seen it. It's another thing I've never seen.
I barely liked it back then. So we'll see how I feel about it.
Other Other movies on the list, just in case that doesn't work out, that we talked about as possibilities, since we are doing March Madness for Martha, we've got four movies to work with, or three now. We did mention possibly trying to do He Got Game.
He Got
which
Game.
Would be, again, much more serious version.
Yeah.
I think Lindsay would appreciate if we threw Space Jam in there somewhere.
Sure. Basketball
Teen
Diaries.
Wolf, I think it's maybe a totally, completely out of nowhere option, but Teen Wolf could be funny as hell. And then, yes, Love and Basketball and The Basketball Diaries both were.
It's really how far we want to stretch like actual basketball into this versus
right.
Basketball is a prop in this film. All right.
Yeah.
Well,
Space Jam, believe it or not, is one of those that's actually much more tied directly to basketball out of some of the other things I mentioned.
Great cast. Fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bill Murray.
Lola, Fuckable Bunny, whatever her name was. Oh. Lola, I think it was.
Oh, it was. It was. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, tomorrow we've got an all-new After Dark on deck. Lindsay's got a fantastic top five for us that she's definitely already thought of, and we'll present tomorrow. Go back and listen to last night's episode of Horseplay, PZ 85 Plays, where
that's what we're calling it now.
It's Horseplay. Where we did episode four, I believe, of the Deadlands. Five. Yeah.
I think if you count episode zero, then it's
five. If you count zero, yeah.
That's not how that counts, because it'd be zero, one, two, three, four. So, yeah.
No, it was episode five anyway. It was five.
Oh, was it really? Oh,
yeah, no, so it would have been episode six. Right. Yeah.
Technically.
Yeah. So, yeah, good listen. That was pretty good. Correct. And we'll be back on tomorrow with After Dark and Friday for Horse Time. Until then, again, balconies closed. You guys take care of yourselves. We'll see you tomorrow for an all new episode. Until then, Hunter, I'm trying to think of some like really heinous shit that's in there. You go tell Aunt B. to have my bean pies ready.
Pies.
Or I'm gonna kick her ass.
Is the one with curls. That's Brady Bunch right there.